Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day, welcome aboard the Starship Zero-G, science fiction, fantasy and historical radio for episode number, well, what are we up to today? 1589, entitled A Suitable Ending. Our podcast title is Super Podders. And I'm Rob Jan. Our co-host Megan McHugh is leading an away team today. And we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land of the Wurundjeri, on which we gather today and broadcast from and to. We would also like to pay our respects to the elders, past, present and future. And today I'm going to take a look at a series that's been running for 5 or so years now, and that is The Boys. The final episode of it has dropped on Amazon Prime. And that completes the 40-episode arc of the series. Quite a lot to unpick in that show, since I'm having a look at the whole thing today. I've been following it for a while. Many, many thoughts. All right, so to start with, the question, what if superheroes were real and actually existed in the real world comes to mind. And that's been asked over and over throughout comic book history. And it is not actually a more contemporary, postmodern deconstructing invention. That's become, well, arguably much more satirical, bleak and cynical, and inarguably frequently more explicit in many senses of the word in contemporary times. In a sense, it's been around since at least the time Captain America punched Hitler in the face on the cover of Joe Simon's and Jack Kirby's iconic Captain America number one comic book in 1940. A very timely comic book, both in its foretelling the USA's entry into World War II a year later, and in timely being a corporate ancestor to today's Marvel Comics. Yeah, I note that Cap never punched Hitler in that particular issue inside the covers, but comic book covers not necessarily reflecting the actual contents of the particular book. Well, that's another trope for another day. US comic book superheroes in general also went to war, although Superman or Clark Kent failed his eye test in the enlistment physical by accidentally using his X-ray vision to read the eye chart in the next room. I wonder if he did it deliberately. No, there's no sense of that. Although, actually, there's quite a bit more to the story than that, but I won't go into that today. And Diana Prince served as an army nurse while also having time to fight Nazis as Wonder Woman. And the heroes became enlisted into real-world morale-boosting and propaganda too, witnessed by serials and war bond drives and comic books being sent to troops. This is kind of archly reflected in the meta-sequences of the movie Captain America: The First Avenger. Now, beyond the mid-century golden age of comics, in the 20th century that is, in later years, both Marvel and DC, amongst other publishing houses, have doubled down on it, ironically reflecting the real world through the superhuman condition as they dealt with pretty much any contemporary issue that you can name. In some now benchmark famous stories, Iron Man became an alcoholic, and Green Arrow's ward, Speedy, was a drug addict, with storylines taking on the challenges of showing extraordinary individuals beset with extraordinary but very familiar issues to us. Now, comics have gone further in holding a clear mirror up to reality. They may be set in alternative realities and franchise fictional universes in some cases, but nevertheless, they are still there, landing some very palpable hits along with the superpowered Biffo. I'm thinking about Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons, the Watchmen's comics back in the 1980s. Pretty much everything that Moore has ever done in the comic world, really, from his famous run on Swamp Thing through to the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and Albion, and of course Miracle Man, where the eponymous superhero ends up ruling the world and creating a part utopia, but very much dystopia as well. A theme echoed in Mark Miller's 2000s Red Sun comic, where Superman as a baby landed in the Soviet Union instead of Kansas and became an all-powerful planetary dictator. Warren Ellis, the great Warren Ellis that is, also had a lot to say about it in his stories Super God, where an actual superhuman arms race is shown in great detail. It's a simple thing to imagine, actually. Now, enter The Boys, which is an adult superhero comic book series co-created and written by Garth Ennis and co-created, designed and illustrated by Derek Robertson back in the day. So we were talking about 2006 onwards through to the 2020s. Well, where Ennis is well known to us from before that, with runs on Hellblazer and creating some of these comic books too. Worked on The Punisher, including the more adult Max imprint, as well as a memorable one about Nick Fury too, about his time in the Vietnam War and other conflicts. Then, of course, he created Preacher, which is quite literally a hell of a comic book, turned into a quite hair-raising television show too. I think, was that an AMC one? He also worked on Judge Dredd and now The Boys from 2006 onwards through to the 2020s, as I've said. There were spin-offs and miniseries and so on. It's actually the same universe as Preacher, I found out as well. And mentioned in passing in The Boys, that is, in the comic book, that actor Simon Pegg was the inspiration for the character of Huey in the comic books and, of course, later plays Huey's father in the television show. A bit of art imitating life, imitating art, similar to the Samuel L. Jackson actor playing Nick Fury in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and also serving as the inspiration for the Nick Fury character in the Ultimates comic books. The source of some ongoing confusion to the mundane world, especially to, I would say, knockoff bootleg merchandise licensees. I saw in a cake shop the other day a Nick Fury action figure. You know how they have toppers for cakes, and often, you know, you get superhero-themed ones, so they'll sell little figures and stuff to go on the top of the cakes. And in this case, it was Nick Fury from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Only they were remembering Nicholas Fury, I think, or at least kind of bringing that to mind, from the comic books, the original comic books, not the Ultimate ones. And the original one was not based on Samuel L. Jackson. It was indeed a white American male. And this is what they've actually portrayed, except they've used Samuel L. Jackson's otherwise likeness. Very strange goings on there. But anyway, cake toppers aside, there is a thing in comic books and in other forms of literature and media as well. Let's take the spy movie television show for one example. You start out with serious spy novels and short stories and movies and television shows. You know, it's like some of the serials in that set in World War II. Or made during World War II or immediately after. You know, you've got your John le Carre ones, your Kellan on television. He's kind of a spy, sort of an assassin really, but also a spy. And then there are the more out there ones where you sort of blend into Spy-Fi with James Bond and Danger Man and The Prisoner on television. And then eventually you get to do humorous ones. It sort of runs a course. You get your Get Smarts and so on. And so too with science fiction and superheroes. Most often they're science fiction ones. Not always, but sometimes they blend in. You know, so you end up with superhero parodies like She-Hulk and Power Man and so on. And with the superheroes, they've run the same thing too, from the World War II serials, Captain America and Captain Marvel and so on. Not that Captain Marvel, another one. A story for another day. But, you know, in the 1960s, they had a very camp Batman television show, flickering back to the regular sort of Superman movies, Superman, the movie, the eponymous one, the Batman movie and so on, Blade and the X-Men movies, which, of course, are essential precursors to the current Marvel Cinematic Universe. But, you know, you've got where they start deconstructing themselves, Deadpool and Wolverine, and also the James Gunn's movies, both within Marvel and DC, his Suicide Squad, Peacemaker television show, Guardians of the Galaxy, and without those particular franchises, with his standalone movies like Super. You've got movies like My Super Ex-Girlfriend, which was on the free-to-air telly the other night, Kick-Ass, Mystery Men, Birdman with Michael Keaton. On a sideways segue here, I saw Michael Keaton dressed up in a giant pigeon costume on the last episodes of the Stephen Colbert Show the other day, mirroring his Birdman character, which of course deconstructs his Batman character. So it all goes around and it comes around, and it's art imitating life and a Roboros in many ways. Now, I thought I might play a track at this point, and the one I've chosen in the final season of The Boys on the television show, season 5, that is, one track that pops up is a Billy Joel one, The Piano Man, which also is mentioned in the dialogue and has a part to play in the actual final story. And I thought, well, I could play that, or I could do what Zero G does best and play a Weird Al parody of that of Piano Man, which also happens to be a Spider-Man song. So we've got our superhero and parody all lined up in one song here. This is Ode to a Superhero, sung to the theme of Billy Joel's Piano Man. I've always liked this particular one.
He's a sick man. This is where sick people come.
Zero G is fun, as you were.
Yeah, here we are with Zero G talking about The Boys today. Season 5, which has now completed its drop on Amazon Prime, and you've got the last of the episodes out, the finale to the season, and indeed the 5-season show, which starts out being set 1 year later. And I played that track just before, the Weird Al Yankovic parody of Piano Man, Billy Joel's classic song there, with a superhero twist, riffing off of Tobey Maguire and Sam Raimi, their particular Spider-Man movie, one of the many precursors to the current Marvel Cinematic Universe. But the boys are in there punching as well. It's 1 year later than the events of season 4. And several of the boys, the resistance against superpowered beings, basically, have been imprisoned in what they call freedom camps, where freedom sets you free. Characters of Frenchie and Huey and MM are imprisoned there. The iconography of the camp is pretty grim. You have to wear red, white and blue trousers and T-shirts featuring the likeness of the uber monster Homelander, and everything is branded merch from your dinner plates to your coffee cups, if indeed they actually give you any real coffee there. I don't know. The propaganda is strong. The only movies that you watch on movie night are all movies about Homelander and the Super 7. It's a terrible place. So things are pretty bad in the world of the boys. They're still trying to find a super virus, which is a V drug that is able to kill the suits, the superpowered individuals. That's proving difficult, but it's also essential to find another V drug, the original one, developed in the 1940s by the Vought Corporation, and that one can actually make superpowered individuals immortal. Now, as you can imagine, Homelander has been trying to get his unholy hands upon that, especially since now he believes himself to be a god, a veritable god walking or sometimes hovering over Earth itself. Did I say that he is Superman gone very, very wrong? Yes, well, we did that before. And we've talked about this before on Zero G as we've sort of rambled our way through the other seasons of The Boys over the years now, 5 years or so. Various other characters have had all of their story arcs changed and abbreviated. Of course, the fact that some of the boys are now in a Homelander concentration camp, well, it's actually a trap for the boys because, of course, Homelander and his minions are just waiting for the rest of the resistance to stage some kind of ill-judged rescue attempt. Well, you know how that goes in these shows. The best way to deal a trap that you know about with is to walk straight into it. So the other things in this season, Homelander still has his notional father, Soldier Boy, played by Jensen Ackles, on ice, but he does thaw him out again in this one to help him, and so we end up with this super-powered father-son dynamic, a very wobbly one, but there you go. The character of Ashley is now the Vice President of the United States, who is very much somebody surfing a wave that she does not want to be surfing, but has no choice. And we've got The Deep, the Aquaman parody character in it, now having real serious issues as he has to deal with basically sucking up to Homelander at every opportunity, lest he be butchered by him like everybody else who seems to be in the orbit of the superpowered monster, or else trying to reconcile his very much green sort of leanings with looking after his ocean buddies. Like Aquaman, he can talk to fish and has a whole sort of quite literal relationship with all sorts of aquatic creatures, but trying to balance that against the rapacious needs of the Voight Corporation and the re-engineered United States. Did I mention that The Boys Season 5 very much parallels real-life political events in the United States, which I sort of talked about briefly in the introduction to today's show about how these postmodern deconstructionist superhero sagas quite often mirror real life in their pages and on the screen, and The Boys really does lean into that at times. The creators of the show are apologetic for seeming to be like they're in the writer's room in hell along with the politicians in the United States and other countries too. So, yeah, it's very current USA and, as I said, often overtaken by current events. I mean, there's a moment where Homelander starts having golden statues of himself put up around the place, and it's so Trumpian. There are signs of development in all of the character arcs for the different people. I won't go into those because there's just far too many over the course of a whole season. Suffice to say that, you know, it still remains the core of the kind of extended not by blood family that rules amongst the boys. There's Huey and his ongoing relationship with the empowered Starlight. There's Starlight's relationship with her resistance, her informal resistance, the Starlighters. And how does that play against all of the propaganda, the counter insurgency propaganda that Homelander and his fascist forces are levelling against the Starlighter and their notional leader? Then, of course, there's Frenchie and Kimiko. Frenchie is a very dodgy sort of scientist fixer character, but he's also in a relationship with Kimiko, the superhero who now can talk after being relatively mute for the last four or so seasons. And now she is wrestling with being empowered and also being further empowered by experiments that they're trying to run that will help to her to level up her superpower skills to Soldier Boy level at least, and allow her to battle Homelander more or less at scale. I will say that there may be some spoilers in this in case you haven't seen season 5, but you know, there you go. It's been a little bit of a time since they landed it, so just letting you know that that's what we're talking about here today. You know, so all of these events are going to come crashing together in the final episode of the show. There are other important relationships too. The relationship between Homelander and his son, Ryan. The relationship between Butcher and his adopted son, also Ryan. The relationship between Butcher and Huey, because Butcher thinks of Huey something like his younger brother who he failed to save from an abusive father. This Butcher's relationship with his father. It's a very complex story. Lots of shipping in this one, with characters who could indeed pick up ships and throw them around if some of them chose to do, and they do in this series. Although I will say, for a show that's about people with superpowers, often the fights are staged on a very intimate level. They're fighting one-on-one or in small spaces. Not too much of the big hero, massive sort of stuff that other superhero franchises generally go into. All right, let's have a track from the series 5 of actually, it may not be from the actual superhero series 5, it might be from an earlier one. Christopher Lenatz's, he's the composer, track for the character Butcher. Just a short one here, just to help set the tone. Butcher, of course, is the character played by Carl Urban.
This is Cory Doctorow, author of Little Brother, Information Doesn't Want to Be Free, and the forthcoming novel Walkaway, and you are listening to Zero G on 3RRR.
Christopher Lenatz there. Man behind the composition you just heard, Butcher, which is from The Boys, the superhero parody, satire, many different things. And that was from season 1, actually, I should say, there, setting the tone for Carl Urban's magnificent, I'm going to call him mercenary with a mouth, but let's say he's equivalent to Deadpool in many ways. All right, so Christopher Lenatz. Actually, he's quite noted for doing soundtracks to parody shows. He did the Sausage Party movie and also worked on Supernatural, of course, because, you know, showrunners often bring people along who've worked with them before for obvious reasons, because they know they can work with them. So Eric Kripke, of course, created Supernatural. So, you know, the rollover into The Boys is fairly obvious. He also has done a lot of games and theme park sort of stuff, including one for he's currently working on the full-length Rogers the Musical. So what started as a joke has actually become part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as many things often do. He's also worked on Galavant, another a musical parody about the fantasy world, quite well received, I thought, at the time, as well as working on Agent Carter, and he's done Generation V, the spin-off from The Boys too. So much to talk about The Boys, especially with season 5. Look, I'm trying to dance around some spoilers. I may fail. It's entirely possible, so please be warned. You know, I do my best, but sometimes I just can't manage it. This is an interesting side note here. I mean, The Boys have been a comic book since the early 2000s, all the way through to the 2020s, having sort of more or less wrapped up about 2021, 22, something like that. Never say never, no. So there might be some more. And indeed, there are more The Boys television shows as well, spin-offs and so on, running. Gen V has been, I think that's been clipped. But there's Voight Rising coming up in the future, and the animated one, the animated Butcher one as well. So there's a few different iterations around, and a lot of the comic books have already been out there for years. So, you know, they kind of, it's a hard thing there because there are spoilers built in to those, into the audience already. So a lot of the boys, comic book fans, might know a lot of the major beats coming out in the television show. At the same time, it gets even more confusing here because the boys' television show does not follow, in much the way that The Walking Dead didn't, doesn't follow all of the beats of the comic books either. In fact, some characters live where some might not live and some die where some might not die, you know, and other plot points as well, all very convoluted there. But, you know, I will sort of try kind of, yeah, no, maybe with spoilers there. And, I'm always alive to the fact that our experience nowadays is so fragmented when we're watching these things. There was a time when pretty much we had things coming out all at once, but if you were in Australia, it might take 6 months for a movie to land on our television shores or at the cinema. But there was less communication in terms of spoilers. Like, you weren't online constantly having spoilers dropped on you. I had one dropped on me the other day about the Mandalorian and Grogu movie. And it was just an offhanded comment, but I realised, oh, is that a cameo? Ah, yes. Ah, didn't want to know that. But that's all right, you know. So lots of different inflections there. So anyway, back to the season 5 show. Lots of themes developed across this season. We've got, you know, things that have been introduced quite early on. We've got the evil corporation, the mega corporation, a common trope in science fiction and fantasy too, for that matter. Voight has been developing their superhero, creating drugs since World War II, which has changed the history of their world much in the way that the characters in Alan Moore's Watchmen have also changed their universe too. That company is echoed from across the whole range of fiction. The Umbrella Corporation in Resident Evil, the Dharma Initiative in Lost, AIM, Advanced Idea Mechanics in Marvel, Weyland-Yutani from the Aliensverse, Vault-Tec from Fallout, the RDA from Avatar. Many of these corporations have been extremely dodgy and sinister. They've had their fingers in every single pie in the verse that they're in, like government influence. It's hard to tell, for example, in Avatar, where the colonial marines start and where the colonization companies begin. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. All you need to know, perhaps, is that they are evil corporations in the end. And, of course, you know, this is mirrored with concerns in the real world. In fact, they even have a tech bro influencer who appears in the season 5 at one stage. As everybody tries to curry favour with the the evil despot Homelander, Superman-like figure whose powers have gone to his head, partly because of an incredibly abusive childhood where he was given his powers, not as a gift but as a scientific experiment. So, you know, it is possible to feel some sympathy for the Homelander character. And this is the thing, another theme of The Boys is the dichotomy of morals. There's a lot of ambiguity in this show where the heroes are not heroes and the villains are not villains. And sometimes they are both and sometimes they are neither. It's a very complex mix in there. The boys themselves as a group of ordinary individuals, at least at first, who oppose the superheroes and their celebrity and arrogance predisposition to become arrogant tyrants, in Homelander's case, with actual delusions of godhood. And this, of course, is also a parody of celebrity culture, with very prominent individuals getting in over their heads and doing very bad things, lots to say the least. So ambiguity in everything is a big theme in The Boys, with not only with morals, but also with the ethics of their leadership or how they follow people. And you can see it constantly playing out between the dynamic between, say, the Deep and Homelander, or the way Homelander inspires fear everywhere, although he just liked to be loved, according to himself. Later on, he chucks that and he decides, well, fear will do. You know, and then there's the whole conversation, which is both important to both Garth Ennis and Kripke as well, the showrunner, the comic book creator, and the television show showrunner. They both have a penchant to have a look at lit religion and the interaction between that and society and individual characters. Very much lent into, of course, in Ennis's Preacher series before this, and now in The Boys. Lots of things to unpack there. The nature of being duped by false prophets and real, he says, quoting In the Air ones too. Very much lent into in season 5 as the Democratic Church of America is further used to leverage public opinion. And, you know, that's a whole can of body worms, as Butcher would say, Butcher would say that in a much more graphic fashion, to be open there. So there's another thing in the show which is constantly on show, graphic violence and, how would I put this, all sorts of sexual deviance and I'm really talking deviance there. I'm not talking about the normal range, the natural range of human sexuality, which includes all sorts of things. But in this case, there are things that are very dodgy indeed by anyone's standards. The desensitization that can be created by showing these things on television and in the metaverse within the show within a show, the normalization of that. Now, I'm probably not the one to have that conversation, but these are things that are opened up by the show. And it makes it tricky to analyze in some respects because you've got, the show opens with one of the character's partners stepping out onto a sidewalk on a normal city street, stepping off the sidewalk and getting run through. By a speedster superhero on their way to fight crime. And that's an extraordinarily graphic and horrific moment. At the same time, they are trying to show that these are literally the impacts of what would happen if there were real superpowered individuals, not just knocking people out or bending lampposts around them to arrest them until the police arrive. But if one of these people punches you, it's lethal. If they toss you into a brick wall, they toss you through it, and there are consequences to that. So in a way, what they're trying to do is explore all of that too. At the same time, and this is the ambiguity of the thing, I can wear a couple of hats, it's quite disgusting. And you just think, this is horrible. Do they really need to show that? Everybody's going to fall on a different level where they watch that. If you decided not to watch The Boys because it is an exceptionally violent show, that would be fair enough. I would cast no shade at you whatsoever for that. At the same time, and you notice I don't say but, because I am seeing that point of view as well. At the same time, the show is also trying to show exactly why this is a bad idea, and it's not necessarily glorified. And again, another caveat to that is that people do get desensitized to it and they look forwards. And this is a problem with horror movies, just generally, they get desensitized to it and it's normalized. And the show does look at that too. So there's a lot of perspectives there to be considered. A complicated conversation. I think that The Boys does it well generally, but at times they do just go way too far and you wonder if it is just gratuitous. And then you wonder if they're having a stern look at you for thinking that it's gratuitous. So, yeah, I have complicated feelings with all of that involved. So it's a tricky show to look at from that point of view, especially season five, which really leans into everything that they've put together from previous seasons. So, yeah, 40 episodes now finished with The Boys. I think I should play a little track here. Guests stars have been a real thing in season five. And this is a spoiler if you haven't seen season five, but you're probably tuned out anyway by now. One of the characters is played by David Diggs from Hamilton. And, of course, Snowpiercer, amongst other shows. And he has a set of pipes on him. And so he's playing one of these evangelical preachers, a television preacher called Brother O, complete with bedazzled white jumpsuit and perfect teeth and a whole willingness to go along with Homelander's ascendance and his ascendance to godhood. And this is one of the songs that he puts together. It's written by Christopher Lennertz, who's a lyricist as well and composed by him, and features David Diggs himself. You can imagine this in the church, the Democratic Church of America, in the show The Boys. It's called Raise Him Up.
Hi, this is Jim Beaver. I play Bobby Singer on the TV series Supernatural, and you're listening to 3RRFM 0G, you idiots.
Just had Christopher Lennertz's composition, the Raise Him Up, from season five of the series, the television series The Boys, which has dropped its finale recently, very recently. Last episode of 40-odd, very odd, seasons on Amazon Prime. The adaptation, of course, of the comic book series. At least one of the main arcs of it. Now no more. That was the final season. But there are, of course, multiple spin-offs in the works and so on, because it's been extraordinarily successful. Always knew it would be. Now, we have talked at length about the characters on The Boys on previous shows. I thought that the final episode landed all of their, sometimes quite literally, all of their characters very well. For some people who've read the comic books, they will be expecting certain things to be entered into for the characters in these stories on the screen. As they will also know, the arcs have differed from the comic books for various reasons, some of them successfully, some of them arguably not. Let's just say I thought that they put the characters into good places, or not, as the case may be. There's another whole discussion to be had there about whether or not violence is acceptable if it's done in revenge. Certainly seems to be illegally so in the case of fiction, if you ever notice that. It's like, oh, well, you know, I've knocked off 25 of these people, but it's all right. It was revenge, or I was wronged, or, you know, so it's all okay now. Hand-wavium legal contracts, no need to have a court case, etc. Not the same in the real world. I definitely underline and add. But any case, they bring them all to places that I think is deserved in some cases. In several cases, there is what I would call literally natural justice, but that's just me. I thought that all worked well. All of the story arcs, the character arcs, came to places that made logical sense. If they are not all where they are of the comic books, well, that is not my fault. I particularly appreciated Jensen Ackles playing Soldier Boy in this season, playing basically a bigoted Captain America, bringing in the tensions of World War II racism and propaganda and so on as well, as sexism too. He's not a very nice person in any of these aspects. But there are reasons for some of that, and they are explained in this. I also thought that Colby Minifley playing the dual character of Ashley Barrett trying to balance everything and stay alive. It was a great character. Look, I could go through these one by one and praise, you know, Carl Urban's mighty performance as Billy Butcher, Jack Quaid as Huey Campbell, steering a wonderful course between his Brad Boimler character from Lower Decks and numerous other characters that he's played over time. I thought he was great in this. And Anthony Starr in the unlovable role of Homelander, just bringing the spine-chilling, spine-pulling vibes as a shiversome, super-powered fascist. Whew, just a tour de force of a role. Not to be admired, the character, but the actual acting craft on display. There should be an Emmy in that for him at least. Erin Moriarty, again in a thankless role as Starlight, but again bringing such nuance to the character over this season. I especially liked Laz Alonso playing Marva T. Mother's Milk, or MM as we abbreviate it, in this one. And Frenchie, Toma Capone, lent into the role and shipped fantastically with Karen Fukuhara playing Kimiko. And Kimiko, as she developed, she gets dialogue in this season and develops as wonderfully as a result. Although I do like her ability to convey just so much with either sign or just her face and body language alone. Now, look, there's too many people to touch base here with, but I especially thought that the guest stars in this season were great. Jeffrey Dean Morgan back as his character, sort of, with Jeffrey being a supernatural character, the Winchester's dad, and of course Negan from The Walking Dead. Simon Pegg, as we mentioned before. Is this a spoiler? If you haven't seen one of the earlier episodes of season 5, stop listening right now for about a minute, because I'm going to mention how it was wonderful that they actually brought together the cast of Supernatural back for this season of The Boys, where we had Jensen Ackles, Jared Padalecki and Misha Collins together on screen once more. And there had been about like 13 cameos of people or appearances of people from Supernatural in this, from Jim Beaver playing Robert Singer in Supernatural. He plays a character in this. We've got Nathan Mitchell, who I think was Kelvin in Supernatural, playing Black Noir number two. And then the other guest stars, from Will Ferrell to Paul Reiser and Seth Rogen and the Eternal star, Kumail Nanjiani, who appears in this too. It's just amazing that they've been able to pull so many different people in there. I even saw Naoko Mori, who played Toshiko Sato in Doctor Who and Torchwood, pop up in this. She was also in The Free Body Problem. She plays a character called Golden Geisha in The Boys. So how does this all land? It's in the fifth and final season. The Boys and Butcher, who possess a virus capable of killing all the superhero characters in the world, including the ones amongst on their own forces, they join forces together. They're all trying to end Homelander's reign, which threatens to become planetary-wide. He wants to become immortal, and he also wants to become immune to that virus too, which is a major point in the plot. But I think they stick the landing, as it says, to use a sports and metaphor. It's a tightly plotted episode, the particular last one. We bring everybody to the point where I think we can leave them and move on from the television show. And that ain't nothing. There's some pretty slick action in it, usually blood slicked in the case of The Boys, and that's true in this one. But I feel like this time some of the stuff they did was a bit over the top. considerably so in some cases, and you will make of that what you may yourself, and be warned. There was one line here, a small one, and a tiny little spoiler for Supernatural fans, where Soldier Boy talks about his relationship with Homelander. He says, look, it was never going to be like playing catch on the front lawn or fixing up the old Impala together. Obviously a reference to Baby in the Supernatural, the car from that. But yeah, you know, so look, I'm satisfied the show went where it had to go and ended the way it had to go. Possibly a bit more benevolent and benign than in the comic books, but I think that's pretty much the way they were heading anyway. As established over the five seasons, the show is what it is. It's its own thing, beyond and different to the comic books. And here's the thing. The comic books are still out there. You can go and catch up with them if you really want to see how it went that way. I feel like the principle of do no harm to the original was addressed and met with some aplomb, if not with absolutely no dignity or grace, because it was the boys. All right, well, that's about it for Zero G for today. We're going to go out with Anne Reburn's Dream a Little Dream of Me, a song which obviously is a classic song, but covered here by Anne Reburn. And I think it actually is possibly a nicer ending for me today. I might play some more boys' tracks on another occasion, but we'll go with this one. Well, that's it for the boys, the blood and bone of the season 5 finale. Out there now to catch or not, as the case may be. I cast no shade. Some of these things are not for everybody. Some of these elements are not for me, but, you know, I took the hit. Ain't I grand? Joe Brunetti coming up next with Astral Glamour, and we are going out with Anne Reburn and Dream a Little Dream of Me. Deployed at least twice within the boys over the 5 seasons.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of RRR0G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on RRR from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the RRR website.